Okay, welcome to the last cosmology class. So I'm going to just go over a few things about late time effects in the CMB, effects having to do with the propagation of the photons from the surface of last scattering to when we observe them. And I'm just going to say sort of a list of what they are at the qualitative level. We don't have time to do anything more detailed. And then I'll talk a little bit about later time structure formation, how the perturbations grow with time, and then the matter power spectrum, again at a very qualitative level. And then I'm going to turn it over to Claire, who will show you some of these Boltzmann codes. Okay, so late time effects. So recall our picture in conformal time, where we have the Earth here, the time of last scattering here. Here's the Big Bang. And here's our observation point. So there are a few effects that have to do with what's going on right here at the time of last scattering, and which have to do with the propagation of the signal from the last scattering to us that that are important for the detailed shape of the CMB, but have nothing to do with the primordial perturbations that we calculated from inflation. So these are effects that are there on top of the primordial perturbations. And they tell you about what's going on in the universe and what sort of things are present, what Newtonian potentials are present, what things were happening at the time of last scattering. So there's a lot of information to be extracted from these effects. Okay, so the first is the Doppler effect. And this is the fact that, so the last scattering surface is where all the electrons basically combined with protons to form hydrogen and the universe became transparent. But those electrons could have had some velocity at that last time. There are very small velocity perturbations in the plasma at that time. And if the electrons are moving, there's going to be a Doppler effect associated with that that you can actually detect in the CMB. Okay, the next is the so-called Sachs-Wolfe effect. And what this is essentially a red shift or a blue shift due to the fact that you can have Newtonian potentials at this time of last scattering. So there can be small perturbations in the Newtonian potential at this time. And for example, if the Newtonian potential is large here, it's like there's a potential well, and the photon is going to have to climb out of that potential well as it propagates to you. And the photon, if it climbs, has to climb out, it's going to appear a little bit redshifted. And alternately, if it's the other sign, it's going to be a little bit blue shifted. So there's a slight temperature gain or loss that correlates with the Newtonian potential at this time of last scattering. And that's known as the Sachs-Wolfe effect. There's also so-called integrated Sachs-Wolfe effect. And this has to do with the presence of perturbations in the Newtonian potential along the line of sight from the last scattering surface to where we observe. So the photon has to pass through Newtonian potentials. And this effect is only apparent if those Newtonian potentials are changing in time. If the Newtonian potentials are constant in time, you don't see any effect because the photon will lose energy going in, but then it'll gain it again going out. So it's only if there's a time dependence to the Newtonian potential that you actually get a net effect. So this effect tells you information about what the Newtonian potential and hence the presence of matter along the line of sight from the last scattering to our observation. Okay. Another is it's called the Tsunayev-Zeldovich effect. And what this is the scattering of the CMB photons off high-energy electrons that might be present along this line of sight. So there can be, there's still, even though everything, there was more or less recombination at this time of last scattering, there can still be sort of residual ionized gas, and there can be scattering of the CMB off electrons in this gas along the line of sight, and that effect has to be taken into account. And the last I want to mention is gravitational lensing. The CMB is light, and we know that light gravitationally can be gravitationally lensed. So this effect has to be taken into account as well. Okay, so now I'm just going to go through at a very qualitative level some things about structure formation and what happens to the density perturbations as they evolve in time. Okay, so there's a difference between how the density perturbations evolve when the universe is radiation dominated versus when it's matter dominated. And this is going to account for the major feature of the matter power spectrum, which I'll show you in a second. So let's define this matter density contrast, which is simply the fractional change in the matter density as a function of position. Okay, so rho m is the matter density, and delta is just a dimensionless measure of how large the fluctuations happen to be in the matter density. And I'm not going to derive this, but there's an equation that describes how these evolve in the sort of Newtonian limit, which looks like this. Okay, so to derive this equation, you would do just like we did yesterday for the primordial and perturbations during inflation. You would take the Einstein equations, but this time after inflation, you would split them up into all their spatial and time parts, and you would do the same for the stress tensor of all the matter. You would split it up into the spatial parts and the time parts, and this is the equation you would get in the non-relativistic limit that governs the perturbations of the density coming from the stress tensor. Okay, so h here is the Hubble constant, which is governed by the Friedmann equation that we know. So here I've reverted to using g instead of m Planck. So let's consider the early times where we only have matter and radiation at play. So the total rho is the sum of the matter rho and the radiation rho. And we know how these two behave because we know how they scale with the scale factor. So we can write this all in terms of the energy density at radiation matter equality, which I'll call rho equality, over 2 times how each of these components scale. Matter going like 1 over a cubed, radiation going like 1 over a to the fourth. So we can take this now, solve for h, and plug it in here, and we get a differential equation for delta solely in terms of a. So it's often, in these kinds of situations, it's good to define a dimensionless variable. So instead of doing things with respect to time, we're going to do things with respect to how much matter versus, or what we're going to do things with respect to the size of the scale factor. We're going to use the scale factor as the clock. So we're going to define x equals a over a equality. So when x is much larger than 1, this is when we have matter domination. And when x is much less than 1, this is when we have radiation domination. So if we change variables in this equation from x, from t to x, we find the following. Okay, so this is convenient because now everything is completely dimensionless. Our time variable is dimensionless. Our density variable is dimensionless. And now we can solve this in these two different regimes. So the solution in the case when x is much less than 1, which is the radiation domination, this density contract behaves like, and this is x is a terrible choice of variable because it's going to be confused with the spatial dependence here. So I'm just going to erase the spatial dependence. This x is not spatial dependence, it's the time dependence. So this goes like log of x. So this is the this is the important qualitative result, that the size of the perturbations during radiation domination grows logarithmically, which basically means it grows very slowly. In the other regime, when x is much, much larger than 1, this is the case where we are in matter domination. In this case, the solution basically goes like x, which means it goes like the scale factor, which means in terms of this time at matter domination, it goes like t to the 2/3. Okay, so this is the important qualitative result in this regime, that once matter starts dominating, the perturbations grow faster. Okay, so this is all still sort of in the linear regime. These perturbations start to grow, but they're still governed by this linear equation. Eventually, they grow larger and larger in amplitude. And eventually, the approximation of doing everything linear, or the approximation of expanding the Einstein action to only lowest order, that approximation starts to break down because the perturbations get too large. And at that point, you have to go to other techniques. You have to do nonlinear. You have to solve the full nonlinear problem in some way. So one of the things people do is to go to numerics. So you do these large scale simulations of structure formation, but n-body simulations where you essentially put all the matter on a computer and you just sort of let it go. So they've done some enormous simulations like this, where they just take like billions and billions of points and just evolve them using essentially the Newtonian equations of motion, and then watch how the structure forms. And it looks quite realistic. You can see sort of galaxies forming and all this stuff starting from these initial linear perturbations. And the other technique people have is essentially effective field theory type methods, where you try to use sort of renormalization group arguments to re-sum some of the nonlinearities, or to at least isolate their effects into some unknown coefficients, which you can then match to these computer simulations to sort of fix an effective field theory that you can use then to make other predictions. Okay, so back to the linear case, I want to talk a bit about the matter power spectrum. So So the matter power spectrum is the other main cosmological observable of inhomogeneities other than the cosmic microwave background. And it's essentially, you just measure this sort of matter contrast, you just measure this delta, and you plot its Fourier transform. So there's many ways of measuring this. You can count galaxies, you can look for absorption lines of interstellar hydrogen clouds. They absorb light from much more distant quasars, so you can detect the presence of these clouds in that way, which tells you about their distribution and hence about the distribution of matter. And there's many other techniques as well. So the basic definition is that we're gonna look at the Fourier transform of essentially the two-point function of this matter over density. Again, the x here is now position. And again, because of translation invariance and rotation invariance, this is all proportional to a delta function, k plus k prime. And then there's something which depends only on the magnitude of k, which is what we call the power spectrum. And if you measure this, what it looks like is something like this. If you plot it on a log plot, a log-log, so momentum is increasing this way. So Claire will show you an actual picture of the data of this, but it looks something like this. It has one major feature, which is a giant peak somewhere here, and it falls off to either side of this. That's the rough shape. So we can understand qualitatively why it has this sort of shape based on this difference in growth rate of the perturbations between the radiation domination era and the matter domination era. This peak, the position of this peak, essentially tells you about when the universe transitioned from radiation domination to matter domination. Okay, so the basic sort of heuristic way to think about this is to imagine starting at very early times, maybe right after inflation, and ask how does this matter power spectrum look? So to start with, it looks just like its primordial shape that came out of inflation. So we're plotting this on a log plot, log of p versus log of k, and we saw that a scale invariant spectrum goes like 1 over k cubed. So this primordial spectrum essentially looks like a straight line with a slope of -3 because it's 1 over k cubed. And then, so this is sort of what you get initially, and then it starts to be processed by this evolution. So what happens is that the horizon starts to grow after the after inflation. Once you enter the radiation dominated phase, there's the co-moving horizon, and there's some scale k horizon at which modes are starting to enter the horizon. And once the modes enter into the horizon, they unfreeze and they're allowed to grow. So the amplitude here basically starts to grow. And it starts to grow logarithmically during radiation domination. And then as time goes by, the horizon becomes larger, which means smaller k. So this point at which the modes unfreeze starts to move this way. And the modes, more and more modes here, are allowed to start growing. Okay. Eventually, you reach a point where the radiation domination cedes way to the matter domination. So there's a k here. There's a value of k, which is the size of the horizon at matter radiation equality. And once the modes here start to enter, so everything here is sort of growing logarithmically, once these modes start to enter and you become, the horizon starts to move over here, it now starts to grow much faster. It now starts to grow, these new modes start to grow linearly because of the behavior during matter domination that we saw from that equation. So once you reach this time, everything starts to grow much faster, and you start to develop this bump. So at further time still, these are growing even faster, and you develop this kind of bump-like shape. And the position of the bump is the position where the mode started to grow faster, which is the horizon size at radiation matter equality. Okay, so that's the rough story. So I'm now going to turn it over to Claire, who will show you some of these computer programs that actually calculate the shape of these spectra. Yes.
Delta is a function of x,
Yes.
How can you write it as a function of small x, which is a function of time?
Yeah, so this was a terrible choice of variable. So the delta is a function of both position and time. So I should have written x and t here. So x hat will be the position, and t will be the time. And right, so here, so the x that I'm showing here, this is only the time variable. So the position actually doesn't enter into this equation. It only tells you about the time evolution, essentially because the matter has no pressure, and the pressure is the only place where the spatial dependence would come in. So these modes evolve uniformly in space.
Solving this equation doesn't help me to calculate the power spectrum over there, right? Because there you are interested in x.
Yeah, that's right. So there's been a slight cheat because this is essentially in the Newtonian limit, where we've ignored sort of the modes entering the horizon and stuff like this, and so this tells you only sort of about the gross evolution of the mode once it's entered the horizon. Okay, so let's try to set up this projector. Presentation, quick start.
If you can use the HDMI input, that would be great.
I think it goes in here.
This is the HDMI.
I don't think there's an HDMI connector.
Sorry, we don't have an HDMI port.
Does this work?
Okay.
Yes, okay.
Great.
All right. Hello? Okay. So I am going to talk a little bit about some of these numerical codes that you can use to do some simulations. So as you heard a little bit from David earlier, in general, some of the physics involved, if you do things really carefully in cosmology, it's basically non-equilibrium processes, which are described by a Boltzmann equation. And these equations in general are very hard to solve analytically. So to do things very carefully and precisely, you have to do numerics, resort to numerics. And so there's a set of codes on the market that essentially, given a set of cosmological parameters, will evolve the equations and give you an output for example, the matter power spectrum and the CMB power spectrum. So there's a bunch of different codes. They've been developed since early on, but there was essentially a turning point in the mid-90s with a Boltzmann code called CMB-FAST. And this was written by Uros Seljak and Matthias Zeldarriaga, and they essentially had a breakthrough in numerical techniques, so-called line-of-sight integration, which allowed these codes to run much more quickly. So it changed things from running in the matter of days to running in the matter of minutes. And nowadays, there's a number of different codes that have built on this original one. You can't actually use CMB-FAST anymore. It's not available publicly. But codes such as CAM, and another one is CLASS. And there's a whole collection of other possibilities. These are publicly available. They're up to date. And they do these simulations for you. And the cool thing about it is that you can literally, on your personal computer, go tonight and download this. It's completely publicly available. And then you can start simulating cosmologies. So you can say, you know, we have a set of different cosmological parameters. But what happens if I say I live in a universe where I change the matter density to be something different? How would that change the resulting power spectrum? Or say you go home tonight and you have some sort of decide you want to make some theory which modifies lambda CDM a little bit. How would that affect the power spectra that you would then compare to experiment, and would that be consistent with what we've measured in the CMB and otherwise? So I just want to give a little demonstration about how you can do this, and hopefully maybe this will be enough to show you enough so that you can go up and play around with it, because this is a really cool available resource. So I want to start by just showing you the web page. This is the CAM web page. And you can just go here and download the source code. And there's also an online interface. So if I click here, it'll take me to this online interface where I don't even actually have to run any code. It's kind of set up for me to just input the different parameters by hand. Here I can change the different cosmological parameters. And then at the bottom I can run. And there's also this sky map output feature. So if you go to temperature only and you run this, I'm not going to run it. It takes a few minutes, but it'll give you a map of the CMB temperature map. So I think you saw pictures of the actual map, but this is a simulation. So I can show you, for example, this is what I got by running this. And this is a map of the temperature anisotropies. And it's a simulation, so you run this each time, you'll get a different answer every time. Statistically, the hot spots will be in different places, but the general pattern is consistent with what we observe. Okay, so I want to go from here to actually talking about how to use the code. Say you play around a little bit with the interface, but now you want to actually. Say you hit something that's a little more complicated and you want to run the actual code. So once you've downloaded CAM, you get a folder called CAM. And CAM is written in Fortran, but you don't need to know Fortran to run it. You basically just get a bunch of different files. And the only one that you really need to care about is this .ini file. So So it's called params.ini. And I've made a new one, which is called params.sci.ini. For the purposes of this class. And so this is the file where you specify your input parameters. So what we want to do is, since we're going to look at the matter power spectrum, we want to make sure that this get transfer is set to true. And then we have a bunch of different options. So I'm not going to worry about Lmax, but here is the place where I can set my different cosmological parameters. So these are the densities. So little omega. Which is related to the related to the capital omegas. You can input here. So this one, OMBH2 is the baryon density. OMCH2 is cold dark matter. OMNuH2 is neutrino, and then you can specify the Hubble constant. So you can change each of these. There's also a part here which specifies what the primordial part. So if you want to change the primordial amplitude, if you want to change the scalar spectral index, here it's set to 0.96, slight deviation from 1. You can change it here. You can also change the redshift. So here it says transfer redshift is set to 0. So it's going to evaluate at redshift 0, but I could change this to something different and run it at any other redshift. So you really do have to play around with this yourself. You can't just look at this. but hopefully this gives you a sense. So what you are going to do then is you have to compile and this is now compiling CAM for me. It takes a moment. Okay, it's compiled. So now what we're going to do is we're going to run our input parameter. So I could have also, like, let's just say, going back to this, I don't know, I want to change the densities, the cold dark matter densities from 0.112 to 0.15. I just save that, and then I can run this. So now this is running CAM, and it seems in real time like it's taking a long time, but this is actually miraculously quick. So it's thinking. Okay, it's done. And so now all we have to do is get the inputs. So let's look back at the CAM folder. When we run CAM, we get a bunch of different outputs. So these are these test different quantities. So test lens CLs, test matter power, test scalar CLs. And this is just a data file. And you can use the data file, you can plot it, and you can get the power spectrum. So let's do that. I'm just going to do this in Mathematica, since that's maybe what you're most familiar with. I apologize if this is kind of small. So I'm going to import as a table one of these files, in particular the MatterPower file. That's what it looks like. So instead of showing that, I'm just going to show it as a list plot. And I'm going to show it as a log-log plot. And this is our beautiful MatterPower spectrum, which Kurt showed schematically. And furthermore, you can compare this now to data. So Kurt was talking a little bit about how you can figure this out from large-scale structure. And so here is an example of the experimental MatterPower spectrum. It looks very similar. So you can simulate and compare. So let's go back and now try to do for the CMB power spectrum. So now we have a file called scale CLs. And this is actually a collection. This includes both the power spectrum for the temperature power spectrum as well as the polarization ones. So you have to select out. So it's like the first column is L, the second column is the temperature power spectrum. Then there's additional columns which correspond to other things. So you have to select out of that table the part of the table that you want. And now I'm just going to do a list plot of this. And you have this beautiful plot with the different peaks of the temperature power spectrum. So you can literally go home tonight and do this yourself. It's very cool. I just wanted to show you. All right. So that's a quick demo of how to. But now I just want to show you some things you can do with this. So for example, trying different parameters. We know what the measured values are, but what happens if you change them? How does the power spectra change in different ways? So for that, I can't do this all in real time. So I have a little setup. So we're going to start with the MatterPower spectrum. I apologize, I don't seem to be able to zoom in here. Bottom right? Oh, here? Ah, thank you. Is that, that didn't do anything. Oh yeah, it did. Okay. All right. So you can see the MatterPower spectrum? Okay, so let's make this a game. Audience participation, and there's no penalty for getting things wrong, and you have a 50% chance. So say that I am going to increase the matter density, and what is going to happen to the location of the peak? Is it going to move to the left or to the right? Any ideas? Left? Okay, anybody else? Yeah, let's vote. Okay, who wants to say left? And everybody has to vote. Okay, who wants to say right? Kurt, that's cheating because I practiced on you. Okay, so it moves to the right. So if you remember from Kurt's presentation, it's set by the size of the horizon at matter radiation equality, right? So if you increase the matter density, then matter radiation equality happens earlier, which means that the horizon is smaller, which means that so K increasing corresponds to distance scale, which are smaller, so it shifts to the right. So let's see that. Okay, so now the red curve is what happens when I do that. And it does shift to the right. Okay, so now, any thoughts? Oh, this is kind of unfair because no, we didn't discuss this at all, but what would happen if you increase the amount of baryons? Let me just show you. We'll take an empirical approach. So this new brown curve is increasing the baryon density compared to the blue curve. So you notice that, well, so Kurt didn't even talk about this in his schematic picture, but there are actually these kind of wiggles to the right of the matter power spectrum. And when you increase the baryon density, they're enhanced. So these wiggles are baryon acoustic oscillations. The baryons are tightly coupled to this photons in as a plasma, and they oscillate before decoupling. And because baryons are part of the matter, this imprints on the matter power spectrum. Okay, so now let's talk about some of the primordial parts. The tilt, this deviation from scale invariance. What do you think happens to the power spectrum? As a hint, what does the name tilt suggest? Any ideas? So it tilts. It literally, so this is where originally it's 0.96. Again, small deviation from one because of inconsistent with a slow roll inflation. And so increasing it from 0.96 to 0.1 literally just causes it to tilt counterclockwise. And then here's the freebie. What happens when I increase the primordial amplitude? What happens to the power spectrum? Somebody say it. Amplified, yeah, exactly. So the purple is the new curve. Okay, so that is for the matter power spectrum. And now let's look at the CMB power spectrum. So here is the plot that I showed you just running the default file. And now I've done different things. So similarly, I've increased the matter density. So what do you think happens? I guess we haven't talked about this, so you shouldn't know, but any random guesses? Okay, well, let's just see. So it actually decreases the amplitude, and it also changes the peak scale. The peaks come closer together. And then what about the tilt? It's going to do similar things. Again, it literally just tilts the power spectrum. And the amplitude is an overall rescaling. OK, so I encourage you to play around with this. It's a lot of fun. So there's one that I left out on the CMB power spectrum, which is what happens when you change the amount of baryons. So I encourage you to download CAM and try that yourself and see what happens. All right, so this is the end of my demonstration on the computer. So what I want to do, yes?
How do you plot the temperature fluctuations that you showed us?
How do you plot it?
Yeah.
So what I did was I went into Mathematica, and I just, so the CAM output is literally just raw data. It gives you a list where the first column is L's and the second column is the power. And so what I was sort of, I was probably a bit too quick about this, is I tried to show, you have to use, for example, you can use Mathematica, and you just import this list in a form that Mathematica can read. So I import it as in the format of a table. And then Mathematica can take that, and if you do a list plot, it will read that and get it in the format of a plot. Is that answering your question?
These are, you're plotting the power spectrum, but I'm talking about the plot of the map of the CMB.
Oh, the map of the CMB. Yeah, so the way that you do that is you go onto the this online interface. So again, I think on the CAM website, there's one of, if you scroll down towards the bottom of the page, they have this option to go to this Lambda online interface. And this is the part where you say here it says temperature only sky map output. You can also plot polarization too. So you just have to run this online interface. And at the bottom, it just is the option to run this. Go. And then it'll think a little while, and then it'll output a bunch of files. So you get an image file. It's an FITS format. So you need to download something that will read that format. But once you do, you can just plot the output. And you can run it several times and see that roughly the map looks the same, but the location of all the different spots are differently, and also see how it depends on the parameters.
Should we be able to extract it from the raw data we generated when we ran the file?
So if you download CAM, as far as I know, you the options are to get the different spectra. Mm-hmm. I think there's different software for getting the maps. But you can do it on this online interface. Yeah. Any other questions?
You could probably do it yourself also, just because you know the seats of that, also put that amplitude in front of a bunch of squares on our monitors.
Can you have a random number, a random generator?
So the power spectrum just tells you the seats of vowels, and that's basically the coefficients in front of each square on our monitors. You can regenerate this guy from that. It probably wouldn't look as fancy as this one.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So I would like to just finish by summarizing some of the dependencies that we saw. So if we can lift this, that would be great.
I would also say that this is actually how the cosmological parameters are measured. They just generate, they just scan through all the parameters until you get the best possible fit to all the data. Then those are the things.
Yeah.
That's why you can do it with such accuracy, because the curve has many, many features. Very few parameters.
Okay, great. It automatically.
Is the actual data available so you can plot the measured curves alongside with your simulations?
Yeah.
Yes. Go to the WMAP website and just download,
you can download raw data files.
And Planck, at some point, it will become available. I think they're very secret. These collaborations are very secretive about their data, so they don't want it. They want to be the first to analyze it into a collision, so they won't give you the data until all the papers are written and so forth.
Unless you take snapshots with your phone of their presentation.
Yeah. Yeah, this is what the BICEP people did. They didn't have like a map of the dust of the sky for like where they need to know where the dust is, and of course the Planck data is all secret, so they. Someone from BICEP just went to a talk, one collaboration where they showed a map and they just took a picture of the slide, digitized it, and used that data to work.
Okay. Yeah, and so somebody who does the baryon simulation and like shows me that they've download cam and does it gets a special prize if I see them around next week. Okay, so just to summarize the different dependencies. Very quickly. So we discussed how the scale of the maximum is set by the horizon size at matter radiation equality. And so in terms of cosmological parameters, this translates into the matter density and the redshift of equality. So as we saw, if you increase the matter density, that will shift the peak to the right. There's also these wiggles. At the smaller scales, in other words, larger k. And this is due to these baryon acoustic oscillations of the plasma. And this is just set by the density of baryons compared to the density of cold dark matter or matter. So having higher baryon density amplifies these peaks. And so the amplitude is set by this primordial amplitude. Which comes from inflation. So A sub S. And it also it depends on the length of the lambda domination. So when Kurt was showing you how that plot of how the power spectrum grew in different stages, he actually didn't mention lambda domination, which is quite recent, and that actually just causes an overall growth of all scales, independent of scale, it's just an overall growth. So that contributes to the amplitude. So omega lambda also affects the overall amplitude. And then we have the tilt. And that just depends on the primordial tilt. Which is NS. So those are the major dependencies of the matter power spectrum, things you can play around with. So now what about the CMB power spectrum? So I encourage you to read more about this yourself. Only 5 minutes to summarize. So the peak scale so essentially the structure of these different peaks of the CMB is set by a particular harmonic of this photon plasma. So the one that's selected out is the one so this plasma is oscillating. And then there's some particular mode which reaches maximal compression at the time of decoupling. And that's the one that is the hottest and the densest, and thus thus figures as the peak. And then there's also the higher harmonics of this, one which oscillates twice or oscillates three times. So the peak scale is set by the harmonics that reach maximal compression at decoupling. So we have, it turns out this depends on the sound horizon at decoupling. So, the sound horizon divided by the angular diameter distance to decoupling. And this depends on the sound speed, which depends on the baryon density, as well as omega matter, which is the time of equality. And this angular diameter distance to decoupling just depends on stuff that happened after decoupling. In other words, the matter density and omega lambda. The peak amplitude is set by the time of matter radiation equality. And this is set by omega m. And then we also similarly have dependencies on the amplitude and the tilt in the same way that we did for the matter power spectrum. So I didn't have time to explain everything because we're running out of time, but I encourage you to read more about this and play around with it on your own. Anything else?
Questions?
All right.